You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hello, hello. This is CITR 101.9 FM, and you are listening to Fan Club with Isia
and Daniel.
Our wonderful show where we talk about movies, TV, pop culture, and pretty much anything related to that. And this week we're going to be talking about, I would say, one of the biggest TV moments to happen, maybe of the 2020s, in my opinion.
I would agree. I feel like it was a pretty huge TV moment for people who are annoying.
So us. AKA us,
AKA
yeah.
AKA us. And that was why you just heard the little theme song there. And if you don't know what theme song that was the Succession theme song by Nicholas Britell, a king, amazing composer.
Did Moonlight.
I can't think of any other things he did.
Beale Street?
Maybe.
I think, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. But bunch of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Succession, Season 4, Episode 3.
Yes, and we're just going to issue a spoiler warning right now. It's a pretty big spoiler, so
yeah.
Alert. If you haven't watched Season 4, Episode 3 of Succession yet, then turn off the radio.
Turn it off.
Turn the station.
What's crazy though is I had a couple friends who like messaged me who don't even watch Succession.
Yeah.
And they were like, did you watch like the Succession episode? And they don't even watch Succession, but it was like such a big thing that they like saw the news and then they like messaged me to see if I had like watched it and what my thoughts on it were and stuff. But should we maybe jump right into the episode?
I think we should.
Okay.
I think we can say it now. The big event of the episode is that Logan is dead.
Logan died
for real.
Logan dead. Smoking on that Logan pack.
Which is nuts. 3 episodes into the season.
Yeah, the fourth, like the final season, like 3 episodes in.
Which I think was an awesome move. I think a lot of people expected for it to happen, if it did happen, to happen at the end of the show or closer to the end.
Yeah.
But they don't do that on Succession because they're good writers. And they break the expectations, I guess.
I want to ask you about your like general thoughts, but should we give like kind of like a recap of the episode first?
Yes.
What happened?
Yeah.
Do you want to or should I?
Go ahead.
Well, this is basically from my memory because I watched it on Sunday. But essentially in this episode, which is titled Connor's Wedding, which is like an insane title for an episode that features like one of the main characters' deaths, but also such a flex on the part of the writers. But anyway, so as the title of the episode suggests, like the episode is set at Connor's wedding on this like yacht that's about to take off from like a New York pier, I believe.
Yeah, to Ellis Island, I think.
Yeah.
For his like big money political spectacle wedding.
Yes, that maybe a rapper will be at that he alluded to in like episode one or something. I don't know if the rapper showed up. But yeah, they're all on this boat except for like Logan, Carrie, I think like Tom. Like there's basically like two parties.
Yeah.
And like on the boat is like Connor, Willa, like Willa's family.
The siblings. And Greg.
And Jerry.
Which is a big one.
That is important. And we don't know if Logan is going to come to the wedding because Logan essentially calls Roman and is like, I need you to fire Jerry. Like, and Jerry, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like the interim CEO or like the standing CEO.
And she's correct. Like the best.
She's the smartest person.
She's the smartest person in the room. She literally deals with all the problems they have, all the big scandals. She deserves to be Logan's replacement more than anyone.
As she said, she danced them through a thunderstorm without anyone getting wet in the episode, which is a fire quote.
Yeah, it's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
And she doesn't deserve to get fired.
No.
Yeah.
She doesn't. So Roman leaves a voicemail for Logan before he does this. And he's like, are you serious? Blah, blah, blah. He says like a bunch of things I don't think I can say on air. But essentially,
Roman leaves Logan.
Yeah, Roman leaves Logan a voicemail. Sorry.
That's okay.
And then Roman goes and fires Jerry. It's literally like so, so awkward.
He's like a dog with his tail between his legs going up to Jerry because they also have a weird sexual relationship in the past. That is very weird, very mommy issue centered. And Roman really likes Jerry, and he has to be the one to tell her this awful news, but he's also
which
spineless,
Logan knows.
Which Logan knows.
Yeah.
Which is also, I think, kind of Logan's way to be like, are you actually, like kind of a loyalty kind of test.
Yeah.
Since Roman is kind of, he's doing this all in the down low, right? Like,
yeah, because I don't think Shiv and Kendall are aware that Roman is like in cahoots with Logan or like working with Logan. So, yeah, he fires Jerry. Jerry understandably kind of like tells him off, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. She's not having it.
She's not having it at all. And I guess we continue on. And then there's one moment that in hindsight now I really like where we see Shiv and Shiv is like ignoring Tom's calls.
Yeah.
Like we, and you think when you're watching it, like, oh, it's because they just agreed to like separate in the last episode. And Shiv like is mad at Tom right now for betraying her last season and like overall just being like not who Shiv wants to be around at the moment. And then we later find out because I believe Tom calls Roman. Is that right?
Yes.
Tom calls Roman. And sorry, I didn't know if you wanted to pick up.
Tom calls Roman and says, your dad is very sick. And for those of you who are not familiar with Tom Momsgams and the way he communicates, he's like the worst person to have to talk to you about someone close to you having a medical emergency. He cannot communicate. He is also spineless and won't just say what needs to be said, so he's just kind of dancing around this like serious medical disaster while the siblings are all just kind of like what's wrong, and Roman's trying to get information out of him, and Kendall is trying to be like super pragmatic, and his like coping mechanism is to be very like solutions.
Yeah, we need the best airplane doctor in the world.
Poor Jess.
And the best pilot,
hardest job in the world, his assistant.
Oddly though, I felt like Tom was almost like a good person to have talked to, because Tom was like, it was almost like he knew Logan was like likely dead by that point, like at the time he's calling, but it was almost like he was trying to like be a little compassionate by saying like, oh, you guys should like talk to him. Tom is basically like, I think you should speak to your dad. He's having like chest compressions performed on him right now. I can put the phone.
But
to
that
your
was
ear.
That was Frank. Frank was the one who's.
Oh,
like,
that was Frank's
should,
idea.
Yeah, he was
okay,
like,
my bad.
Should, he was like, "You should talk to." Yeah. Let the kids talk to him, and Tom's like, "Okay."
Overall, I thought Tom was like yes, he's spineless, but I felt like that spinelessness gave him like a softness that they probably needed.
Yeah.
In the moment,
I would just be so frustrated, like not know. I'd rather just know.
Yeah.
And Kendall and Roman are the ones who are there when they get the call, and then they have to go get Shiv.
My heart, I'm getting like nervous, like as you're describing this again, because I'm remembering watching the episode. But sorry, continue.
That's no problem. They go get Shiv to come do her goodbyes, essentially. She's very teary. And this whole time you don't really see Logan until Shiv is talking to him. And then you finally see them actually doing the chest compressions on Logan.
Yeah.
Because like my partner was like, he's not dead. This is all a trick, because we hadn't seen him yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm like, no way would they do that. That's insane.
And I read, like I was reading an article about like the process behind the direction for this episode. And so the director is like Mark Mylod or Mylod.
He did The Menu.
Yeah, he also directed The Menu. And he's directed like almost half of like all of Succession's like 30 plus episodes. But he was saying that him and Jesse Armstrong, who like wrote the episode and also created the show, felt like it was almost disrespectful to show like Logan's body or any more than they
had to.
Yeah. And they used the word like ethically and like respectfully, which is just like hilarious but crazy to me that they were thinking that way. But it's also like kind of a testament to like how seriously they take the characters and the show and the writing and stuff. But yeah, you only see Logan's body when, like you said, I see a, like, Shiv is talking to him. You only kind of see, like, him in the background, like, someone doing chest compressions on him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really get to, like, he very much dies, like, off screen.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting, because kind of how it happens in real life.
Yeah, they didn't, it was obviously very dramatic, but
yeah,
they didn't, like, crank up the drama of it. Like, especially on the scene of the death, it was just very, like, awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like everyone on that plane was just like, what? Just kind of sitting there like, what do we do?
And another analysis I was listening to that I thought was really interesting is that like as soon as that phone call happens, like the rest of the episode is like more or less just in real time and you're just watching them like react to this.
True.
And then B, like other than like a handful of moments, there's not really anything like quotable on the level that like Succession usually is. Like when they're all giving like their last like words to their dad, like Roman isn't doing any of his like quips or anything like that. Like the one quote that stood out to me was Kendall when he's like, I can't forgive you, I love you, or whatever.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're just like babbling. Like
it's very earnest.
Yeah, very earnest.
And this scene, sorry to be on the Shiv hate train for my entire life, but just her looking at Kendall and Roman being like, why didn't you get me? While they're all forgetting about Connor. No one has even thought to get Connor, like, even once.
I didn't even think about Connor, though.
I literally, the whole time I was watching, I'm like, where's Connor? Like, where is he?
Yeah.
And they completely forget, and they, like, try to cover it up, and they're very, like, Roman to Shiv is like, I'm sorry, I was just like taken aback in the moment and I should have gotten you sooner. But with Connor, they're just like, yeah, it just happened, whatever. Like they're just so dismissive. They all leave his wedding and it's like, I guess they left for the business of it all, but like, come on. It's like they don't learn anything. Like they're like, all they've learned is to prioritize business over the personal their whole lives, and they choose the business again over the personal. And when Connor dies, I don't know, maybe they won't even care, but one day Connor's gonna die and they're gonna all be like, hey, Connor. And they could have gone to his wedding.
They could have.
But they chose the business over the personal, as they always do. And now it's this like weird mix of emotions where they just have to shove down their like personal trauma to like secure the market.
I feel like it was almost like the one situation where, at least to me, in like the scope of the show, where that was like almost justified, because I feel like it wasn't necessarily that they were immediately thinking about that, but because like the party on the plane, which is like Carl, Frank, Katarina.
Katarina,
and I can't remember else. They're like, oh, we're drafting a statement.
Yeah.
And then I feel like that's when the siblings, or at least the three siblings, are kind of like, wait, like, why are you drafting a statement? Like, why not us? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's when their business mode kind of kicks in. or at least especially Kendall's. But yes. I feel like until then, they're kind of like flailing about and they don't really know.
Yeah.
What to do, and business isn't necessarily the number one thing on their mind. But one thing I was going to ask you about Connor was, what did you think of his reaction? Because like the first thing he says when he hears that Logan has died is he never even liked me, which I thought was really sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, because he probably just like already knew like Logan alive or dead, healthy or not healthy, wasn't going to come to his wedding anyways.
Yeah.
So that was probably on the front of his mind, just being like, wow, my father doesn't care about me. And then he dies and he's just like, and it's never going to happen. Like,
yeah.
That was like my last feelings towards my father were just him knowing that he doesn't give a crap about anything about me. And I guess all of them had that, like all their last thoughts before Logan died was like they were strange, they weren't talking.
I thought it was funny when because when Carl and Frank and Katarina are like, oh, we're drafting a statement because you guys are estranged, and I think it's Kendall that's like, we're not estranged, we had a family function yesterday. And it was like the karaoke bar when Logan drama. Like told them off. But sorry, I forgot what I was gonna say. I was gonna say, because I feel like before we got dropped into like the morbidity or morbidness or whatever of the episode, it's already pretty dark with in terms of what we learned about Connor and Logan. Because what did you think about the loony cake story?
Ugh, so sad. I just feel like Connor is just obviously he's awful in his own way, but he's just so extra pathetic in his own little way. And yeah. Everyone in his family forgets about him. I really liked his moment with Willa.
Yes.
Where it was just like, she was like, yeah, well, you provide me safety and security and like, I'm happy in this weird relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know. I feel like it was the most earnest moment we've seen from them.
I definitely think they have the healthiest relationship in the show.
Yeah, it's the most, I mean, they have like the only relationship at this point, right? No one's even has space for that anymore.
I guess I mean in terms of like person to person, not even necessarily romantic, but they seem like they
But like the... even like there's no like friendship portrayed on the show. Like even the familial relationships are like barely hanging on a thread. Like they're like the only like it's like them and then Logan and Carrie. Like
Speaking
and Greg
of...
and Tom.
What did you think of that, like, 5-second shot where you see, like, Logan's bodyguard, like, kind of looking sadly
into the
distance?
Oh, my God, so sad. The distance. They probably spent the most time together.
Yeah.
And Logan said he was his best friend. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to check in on him because oh, you're just a worker or whatever.
Nobody cares. Because I read, like, a take on social media that was like, oh, they probably were best friends because, like, if you think about, like, the mindset of Logan Roy and just, like, the world he operates in, like his bodyguard, whose name I forget. I don't know if it was like Colin or something or whatever. But anyway, in like the world of the show, it's a very like solid relationship because the bodyguard like never asks for anything more. He's very like reliable. He always is where he's expected to be. And he's never tried to like take that we know of, or at least what's been communicated to us. He's never tried to like take advantage of the access he has to Logan in any way. Whereas like everyone else in the show, literally like all their success and all their like one-ups and aspirations revolve around Logan, where he just like provides for Logan's needs in that function.
Yeah. What do you think about Carrie's reaction?
Did Tom say, like Chucky the Clown or something like that?
Yeah, they called her Chucky the Clown because she was like doing the nervous laughter, which is something I'm fall prey to a lot. If I'm in an uncomfortable situation, I start like giggling.
That's fair.
But I mean, come on, he died. Just like cry or something.
Yeah.
Why is she, like laughing?
That was really weird. I mean, I think I found the situation funny, or at least like Tom and everyone's reaction to it. And I thought it was like funny in a sad way that she was like, oh, do you guys like need my help or anything?
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, Logan's dead now. Like, you have no value.
Yeah, literally. they're like, your clout, your access is gone.
Yeah.
Like, you're nothing.
Go
in
sit
the
in the back of the plane.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah. And then what did we thing. I thought another take I saw was like, I thought it was interesting how like each of the three siblings, like Kendall, Roman, and Shiv, kind of represented like three different responses to grief, where Roman was like denial because they're like, well, he's still doing chest compressions. Yeah. Like, are we sure he's dead? And he's the one who like needs to see the body before he's like sure he's dead. And then Shiv, I didn't know this was a response to grief or if it was, but someone was like, oh, Shiv was like stalling because she was like, oh, I don't want, and maybe that's another form of denial, but she was like, oh, can we just keep like the plane circling until we're like until she's ready to accept it, essentially. Yeah. And then Kendall eventually kind of has more of like the shark like business mindset where he's like, everything we do today will be known as what we did the day our dad died. So we got to make sure like we have it together, which sounds like cold and like too business minded. But I think to me that also proved like why if any of the siblings is going to like succeed Logan, it should be Kendall.
Because he's been the one who's wanted it forever. And like, he was not hoping for Logan's death in the first season, but he was kind of like banking on it.
He was ready.
He was ready.
Yeah.
Because
I was
just going to say, now that it's like actually happened, I don't know. He's so big brother, even though Connor's the actual big brother. He's so big brother, and I feel like they need someone like him.
Yeah.
Just to like keep the truck moving.
Exactly.
Because Shiv gets distracted, and Roman's a little weenie boy.
Roman is a little weenie boy. I could see Roman. I mean, maybe not now without Jerry, but there was a time in like season 2 or 3 I could see him like getting it done CEO-wise.
Really? I feel like he could be something like COO. I don't know what these
Yeah.
like one of the other ones, but I feel like he's not like a shark, and he'll bend to like interpersonal relationships, just like he can't be strong and like hard and like thing in situations like that. Like Jerry could get him to fold. I feel like his siblings could get him to fold. His dad could obviously get him to fold.
Yes.
So I feel like he's too impacted by like personal relationships. Whereas Kendall's just like, I've been trying to screw over my dad for 5 years.
For years, yeah. That's very fair. Because I was reading about kind of like the parallels between like this episode and kind of like the early episodes in season 1. Because season 1 of Succession starts with Logan in, like, a form of medical distress where they are thinking, like, someone's going to need to succeed him. And Kendall's kind of like, okay, like, I'm ready. Like, let's do it kind of thing. So I feel like compared from then to now, it was like, okay, maybe he could. Maybe he could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also was reading an interview or listening to an interview with, like, Jesse Armstrong. And they had originally planned to kill off Logan, like, in season 1 when all that was happening.
Oh.
But he was like, oh, the scenes with, like, Brian Cox are, like, so amazing. We can't, like, just kill this character off.
Yeah, so that like, would have been so...
Like, such a different show.
It would have been, I feel like the power struggle between Logan and his kids and, like, mostly Kendall has been way more interesting than a power struggle between, like, the siblings and... like, you know, the other top people in the company would have been. Because I feel like that's more expected. But, like, having just, like, this ruthless kid and his, like, super powerful, impossible to, like, move father is just really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we take a little break? Get back to it?
Yeah. We're going to play some ads and then we'll be back.
The NCRA is excited to bring back the podcast school from March 7th to April 13th, twice a week for 6 weeks. We will be hosting online classes that will be recorded and shared with participants. Classes will cover various podcast related topics such as the basics, what defines a podcast, and how to be a representative. Visit podcast.ncra.ca to register and learn more about the courses and their presenters.
The 22nd edition of DOXA, Documentary Film Festival, returns May 4th to May 14th, 2023. Committed to cultivating curiosity and critical thought, DOXA will present both short and feature films from across Canada and around the globe, representing some of the best in documentary cinema. This year, Doxa is once again returning to local theaters. The in-person festival will include live conversations with filmmakers as well as industry-specific events. The festival program will be announced soon. Visit doxafestival.ca for more information.
The NCRA is excited to bring back the podcast school from March 7th to April 13th, twice a week for 6 weeks. We will be hosting online classes that will be recorded and shared with participants. Classes will cover various podcast-related topics such as the basics, what defines a podcast, and how to be a representative. Visit podcast.ncra.ca to register and learn more about the courses and their presenters.
Hello, hello. You're listening to Fan Club on CITR 101.9 FM with Isia and
Daniel.
Yes. So obviously we just spent a very long time talking about a very important death.
The right amount of time.
The right amount of time. Talk about a very important death in one of our generation's best TV programs. Programs? Programs. I just said programs like Trixie Mattel, who's a drag queen from Minnesota, and she says a lot of things weird. Anyways, tangent. Succession.
Yes.
And that got us thinking about other deaths in like movies or TV shows that have left a stamp on us, whether they were just like done really well or made us cry a lot or traumatized us. So yeah, we just wanted to talk about those a bit.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. So I have a couple that were important to me as a kid. First one that I wanted to talk about was Little Miss Sunshine, when the grandpa dies. Mm-hmm. This was more of just a death that I think was really well done in a movie, and it is very touching, but also like really funny and just kind of exciting. Have you seen Little Miss Sunshine?
I have. I actually watched that like recently too, or rewatched it recently, but
Do you like it?
Yeah, I liked it. I feel like it was probably, because I feel like I saw it when I was like 12 to 16, somewhere within that age range.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of when I started realizing like, oh, I like these movies where it's like maybe not the most plot driven, but it kind of just follows like a family with some form of dysfunction and you kind of just like watch them be together. And I was like, oh, I like character driven film.
Yeah.
I've seen Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, I was obsessed with the movie as a kid, and it's persisted. And it's interesting because, okay, if for those who haven't seen the movie, Little Miss Sunshine is basically about a young girl named Olive Hoover who has to go to a pageant on the other side of the country at Redondo Beach, I believe. Not the other side of the country. Where is Redondo Beach? Florida?
Anyway, I don't know.
I think they're going from the Midwest to Florida. It's a road trip.
It's on a coast.
They can't afford to fly with the whole family. The father is a very big like self-help guy. The mom is just trying to keep the family together. Mm-hmm. Her uncle just tried to commit suicide, so he can't be left by himself. Her teenage brother is very angsty. She has an old grandpa who's awesome. Yeah, Paul Dano. Fell in love with him in that movie. But basically, they all have to go. And they do this long road trip, and a lot of fun things happen on the way. And it's their family dynamics. They're all very interesting characters. Everyone's really good in it. And her grandpa, who's kind of the guy who has encouraged her in her pageant career. She isn't the typical pageant girl. She isn't, you know, Toddlers and Tiaras. She's just this, I don't know, normal little girl who wants to be in a pageant.
Yeah.
And her grandpa, and because her dad is very, like, self-helpy, bro-y, he kind of puts her down sometimes with her weight and, like, tells her she shouldn't eat ice cream or else she'll gain weight, which is awful. She's a little girl.
Yeah, that is terrible.
And her grandpa is just like, you're beautiful. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. You're amazing. And he, like, gasses her up, and he's so sweet. And they work on their little choreo together. And they have this big emotional scene where he's telling her she's beautiful, she's awesome. And she's like, thanks, grandpa. And then he goes to the bathroom and does a bunch of drugs, and then he dies. and basically, because they have to get to this pageant, and they have to drive there. They can't leave the body at the hospital because they're not allowed to do that, but they can't take the body with them to cross state lines because that requires a lot of paperwork. So they're in this big predicament, and they opt for sneaking the body out of the hospital and just driving, continuing the road trip because they're on a time crunch. And they also have to like pretend they don't have a body in their trunk for the rest of the show when like cops stop them and things like that. So it's very funny. They don't really have time to like process their grief because they're just like on this big adventure.
Yeah.
And when she finally goes to the pageant, her performance is very inappropriate, which is kind of funny because her grandpa
like was egging her on.
Was the choreographer. It's to what's that song called?
Is it like Hit Me Baby One More Time? No, she's
Super Freak.
Super Freak. Yeah.
Her choreo is to Super Freak, which is not really the pageant. You would say,
especially a children's pageant.
But the
vibe.
Thing is, children's pageants within themselves
are icky.
They're so icky. Yeah. It's like all these little tiny girls, like spray tanned and dressed like adults, and like it's also just ironic and funny because everyone's so like taken aback by her dance to this like kind of sexy song, but she's like the most normal kid there who's just dancing and like isn't even thinking about that while everyone else is like being spray tanned in bikinis and they're like, that's fine, but this little chubby girl dancing to Super Freak is where we draw the line.
Yeah, got them clutching their pearls.
You just had a epiphany gasp. What were you gonna say?
Oh no, I was just pretending to be one of the offended parents.
But the ending is a nice tribute to the grandpa, and also the family all comes together to defend her on stage when the judges try to
tell her off.
They all go up and dance Super Freak with her, and it's brings the family together, and it's a very beautiful story about
it's very wholesome
about life. And
who knew Rick James
success.
Could bring tears
yeah.
to her eyes?
that was so long.
No, that was great.
But I love A Little Bit of Sunshine, and that's one of my favorite deaths, portrayals, and plot lines in a movie, I think. How about you?
I was trying to think a lot about this, and the deaths that came to mind, I realized, were like mainly in like Marvel superhero movies, because those were kind of like my, I mean, we talked about this in our Marvel episode, but those movies like were like the, like those were the movies I like had to go see in theaters like opening night or whatever. Like it was a huge part of my childhood. So I feel like one of the most impactful deaths for me in like movies or TV was in Avengers Endgame.
When Iron Man
died, because I think I was like, I think this was maybe like my last year of high school or like the year before. I don't know.
Endgame, we were in university for sure.
Okay, we were in university, but I saw it with all my high school friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I saw it with all my high school friends, and it was kind of like the end of an era. And because like that was kind of like the capper of like all these movies I'd grown up with, like since the first Iron Man. And I think like the Avengers 1 was like the first like PG-13-ish movie I saw in the theaters with like my dad or something. So yeah, the death of Iron Man was like weirdly very impactful and emotional for me. I don't think I cried. I kind of wish I did. I wish I cried in general, but I didn't cry. But I was definitely like, oh, damn, like Iron Man's dead. Because especially in the movie before that, like Infinity War, you're kind of like thinking he's going to die. And he kind of has a little brush with death because Thanos like stabs him or whatever. But anyway, like since the first Iron Man, I'd had such like a strong like emotional and just like life connection to these characters. So him dying was kind of like, okay, this part of my... this era of like my life and fascination, I feel like is kind of ending, and now I'm moving on, which wasn't what I was thinking at the time. But now thinking back, I'm like, damn, that's over. And then also in the like the movie before that, Infinity War,
Loki
dying.
I was
dying.
Gonna say that was the Marvel death that I was most like, ah, now he's besties with his brother just for him to go die.
Because especially since he dies in the first like 10 minutes of the movie, which is insane, and I still think like one of the. I think Marvel killing off Loki and Iron Man are like the coolest things they've done, but even though they brought Loki back, which was so annoying.
Like now with the multiverse, and those actors will never get out of those contracts.
I know, and I don't even think the Loki show is that good, which is maybe a hot take because it's definitely one of the better ones. But yeah, I really wish that show didn't exist. But anyway, the Loki death was also really impactful for me because weirdly this has a lot of familial ties. But anyway, my mom doesn't really like, or at least in my opinion, didn't really like superhero movies as much as the rest of my family, but she really loved the Thor movies.
The worst one.
Kind of the worst one.
Except for Ragnarok. That's
except
my favorite
for Ragnarok,
movie overall.
Yeah, Ragnarok is really good. She really likes the Thor movies because she really loves Thor and Loki. I think she just really loves that dynamic. And I think because the actors are good looking probably too. But
valid.
So that was one where she was Loki died. And I was damn, Loki died. Because you said, he had a very sad character arc where he finally regains the trust of his brother just to be killed off. So yeah. I feel like those ones are really impactful. I feel like Gamora too, just because that one was a stone cold death when Thanos just throws her off a cliff.
And I guess Black Widow died, but whatever. Or no, yeah. She died, yeah.
She dies in Endgame. But that one I was sad about, but they did not pay.
She made a movie with...
Yeah.
And she didn't get a funeral.
She didn't get a funeral. It would have been so easy to just put her picture up beside Tony Stark's at the end of the movie, but whatever. I'm not mad about that. But yeah, I feel like my most impactful deaths were mainly superhero movies, at least if I had to rank them. Mm. And then I believe you have another one as well. I see it.
Yeah. So I had death that made, the movie that makes me cry. I haven't seen it since high school, so I don't know if it still has the same effect on me. And it probably honestly doesn't, because I feel like I'm less into white people going on life adventure. But
the white people changing genre.
Yeah, white people changing genre. But Into the Wild, Emile Hirsch in that movie. Have you seen Into the Wild?
I don't think so. Is that the one with Reese Witherspoon?
Maybe she's in it for a bit. I can't remember. Kristen Stewart's in it. Vince Vaughn is in it.
Okay,
for little vignettes. But basically, it's based on a true story about a guy named Chris. I forget his real name, but I think he changed his name to Chris McCandles, and he comes from a well-to-do family, and he's I don't want to do corporate life, and gets rid of all his possessions, and he goes on big hiking adventures, and then he goes on this trip to Alaska, but he messes up, and the crossing, basically, that he has to cross, he didn't account for how it would be a raging river in the spring, so he can't cross it, so he has to stay up there longer, and while he's there and he's foraging, he eats the wrong kind of plant. And he basically dies of starvation via poisoning because this plant makes it impossible to keep anything in food wise. Yeah. So he just starves to death.
Damn.
And you know he's gonna die from the beginning of the movie, but then you see his adventures and his perspective on life and all this, adventures he goes on and the silly little mistake he makes. When he's in Alaska, that causes his death, and it's just so sad. It would make me cry like a baby. And I also read the book.
That is sad. Life is so fickle.
Life is so fickle. and there's actually a book by John Krakauer, who's he writes about adventure things, I guess. He wrote a book about his Everest descent, ascent and descent that went horribly wrong. And he wrote this book, a nonfiction book about Chris. And the book, it's really interesting because it's pretty much all about whether he was special or if he was just a dumb guy who didn't take the right precaution. Different people in the hiking kind of camping scene have different opinions on it, because some of them were he didn't plan well and we shouldn't idolize this guy.
Yeah.
The other half were I don't know. They're just he's just something special about him. Everyone who met him just thought there was something special about him.
Was it people outside the hiking camping community that tended to revere him versus within it?
I watched it and I was oh, what a special guy. Oh, I can't believe he died. And it made me cry a lot.
Yeah.
When I was 16. So I feel I don't know. It's just, and the mistake he made was so minor. It was the plants looked so similar.
Mm-hmm.
The one that was edible versus the one that was poisonous. And he was already starving, so it's probably a little
loopy. That's why I'm not vegan.
what?
Sorry.
Sad to And like, there's a scene where he like shoots a deer to try and eat it, but he messes up the like smoking process, so it goes rancid, and he's like so sad because he wasted this animal. Like, he didn't even get to eat it. And it's like, oh, gosh, sadness. And he's just on the struggle bus.
He really should have done some more research. I'm sorry. But now
He had a book. And a little, foraging, like, you're never supposed to forage without someone who knows what they're doing. And, like, obviously, you're not supposed to take risks. But, like, he was starving, you know?
Yeah.
And he had a book, and he only realized later that he was like, oh, my God, oh, it's slightly different. When he starts getting sick.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know, reading the book made it, it's still sad, but reading the book, I think I would not bawl like a baby watching the movie now, because they also talk about a lot of other adventure people who, like, died doing dangerous things. But that was another one. You should watch the movie. It's good. Kristen Stewart's in it.
I do like Kristen Stewart.
Little baby Kristen, I think pre-Twilight.
Oh, okay. Maybe. So it's like an older movie.
Like early 2000s.
Okay.
You know Emil Hirsch?
From Speed Racer.
Yeah, maybe. He's in Lords of Dogtown. Have you seen that movie?
No, but I have.
That's
seen
a death
Speed
that
Racer.
Made me sad, actually, too. Sorry. This is
What was the death in that?
I'm sorry. This is such a tangent.
No, did I?
Lords of Dogtown is a movie about, based on like a real group of people who were like kind of early skaters, and when skateboarding became like corporate, essentially. Like, not corporate, but they started doing skate competitions, and like, it became a job, like, who gets sponsored as a skater. And there's a few of them. There's like one guy who's like super flashy, and he gets absorbed into the like cloud of it all. And then one of them gets brain cancer and he dies. And never really skate that well. And they all kind of made fun of him and his like ear problems. But turns out the ear problem was brain cancer.
Damn.
He dies. Yeah.
This is a sad episode.
Any more deaths that
Bing
Bong?
Yeah, I have Bing Bong. I want to talk about Parks and Rec first.
Someone
though.
Died in Parks and Rec?
Okay, yes, because spoiler alert for those who haven't seen all of Parks and Rec, but
it's been out.
It's been out. It ended in like 2014.
I'm looking up. But
oh my god, it's almost been 10 years. Anyway. yeah, Parks and Rec, probably still one of my favorite sitcoms to this day. And I, like, loved Parks and Rec so much, like, while I was in junior high and high school. And basically, the final season, like, the 7th season, takes, like, a time jump, like, 3 years in the future. So, like, it came out in 2014, but it's set in 2017. So they just have, like, a bunch of jokes throughout the show about, like, weird, like, little things that are happening in 2017, like a Hitch 2, or how, like, Morgan Freeman and Shailene Woodley have, like, a celebrity beef, like, stuff like that. Just, like, weird, funny things like that. But the series finale takes, like, another, like, multiple other time jumps where you essentially just see, like, how each main character's, like, how the rest of their life goes, which I, like, really loved. And I think it's one of the best series finales of all time. But they follow, like, the character of Jerry, like, the rest of his life. And if you've ever seen Parks and Rec, Jerry is, like, the character that everyone basically, like, pardon my language, but, like, shits on throughout. And he's kind of, like, the butt of every single joke ever, like, whenever it comes to... Because Parks and Rec, for the most part, is a very, like, kind-spirited show, and no one really, like, bullies anybody except for Jerry, who they all, like, mercilessly pick on, which makes it really funny. But to kind of, like, counteract that throughout the show, they've given him, like, a great life. Like, he has, like, a super hot wife, like, randomly.
Nice.
And, like, I don't know. A bunch of other things are probably inappropriate to talk about on the show. But he has a good life, and everyone just makes fun of him. And then in the series finale, you, like, follow through, like, the rest of his life. And basically, he, like, gets elected mayor, like, a year later from, like, when this...
Of Pawnee.
And then he keeps getting reelected mayor every single year until he dies. And he dies at, like, age 100. And he has, like...
That's not sad.
Yeah.
It made you sad?
No, I'm not even talking about saddest deaths. Oh, this is just, like, my favorite. Yeah, okay, like, okay, I okay, loved
okay,
it.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and then they have, like, this big, beautiful, like, celebration of his life. And, like, everyone comes, even, like, all of his coworkers that always made fun of him, like, Leslie and Ben and April and Andy and all the rest of them. So that was one death when I was like, oh, this is, like, really sweet. And honestly, like, 100 is, like, pretty good age to go.
Too old. Unless you're, like, chilling, I guess.
Unless you're chilling. But, yeah, I liked that one because I was like, okay, death doesn't always have to be sad. And it seems like a very like fitting end for such a sweet and wholesome show.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I have a death that traumatized me as a child, but I think I'll actually play some ads before I talk about that.
Okay.
And then we'll be back at my traumatizing TV death.
I'll be in suspense.
Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Do you love to read, but your friends and family are tired of you droning on and on about your latest book? Well, forget them, because you have me now. Hi, I'm Randy from Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, a book club coming to you through the airwaves from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. every 2 weeks on Tuesday evenings on CITR 101.9 FM. Tune in to hear the rambling thoughts of a fellow reader that are factually supported by my co-host of the week. Follow the show on Instagram at Dog-Eared Radio Book Club to find out about our next read.
Hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Fan Club with Isia and Daniel.
Hello.
And we have been talking about the best TV movie deaths, the saddest TV movie deaths.
The sweetest,
the funniest. And now we're moving on to the movie deaths that traumatized me as a child.
Woohoo.
So I was just at home on Sunday afternoon, and my parents were like, oh, you should watch this movie, it's a good movie. And I'm like, oh, sure, okay.
Sorry, before you go on, Sunday afternoon like movie watches with parents are like a core, like those are so fun.
Yeah, they're
like,
fun just, until like, the movie's down. The Green Mile, and then they're not.
Oh, okay.
Fun.
My bad, continue.
Well, okay, the thing was, I think we watched the first half of the movie together, and then I like went to bed or something.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I had to watch the second half by myself while my parents were outside. I just remember them being outside while I'm in the living room watching this movie by myself. Have you seen The Green Mile?
I have not, but
do you know what it's about?
No.
So The
For
Green
some
Mile,
reason, I thought The Blind Side, but that's like none of the same words are in that movie title.
So, no, but that's okay. So Green Mile, based off a Stephen King novel. It's Tom Hanks, and I forget the actor's name. I should know his name. Who's the counterpart?
Michael Clark.
Michael Clark.
Like Michael Clark Duncan.
Yes, it's Michael like Clark Duncan. Yes, big guy. So it's basically about Michael Clark Duncan is a black man. I don't know when it's set. Maybe the 20s? I don't know when it's set. But basically he's accused of murdering these two little white girls. He didn't do it, but he's accused and he's put on, but he's found with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why is he with these two girls? And he gets put on, he's sentenced to death via electric chair. And Tom Hanks is a prison guard, and he's like the nice prison guard. And then there's another. Oh, it's Sam Rockwell, because he always plays racists. I don't know why they always cast Sam Rockwell as racist.
Why does Sam Rockwell keep taking those roles?
He seems like a nice guy, but he's always cast as these awful racist guys. Anyway, Sam Rockwell, evil guard. And basically, through their time in the cell or whatever, Tom Hanks learns that Duncan's character, John Coffey, is magic. He can do magic and he can heal people. He
Michael
has like
Clark
healing
Duncan's character.
Yeah, he has okay. power to heal people. And what he was actually trying to do with these two little girls, he was trying to save them.
Yeah,
he can do that. And like there's a funny scene where he like saves someone from a UTI, like he heals someone's UTI.
Oh wow.
But it's like funny because he's like, I don't know, touching his crotch or something, I don't know. Ha-ha.
Yeah.
And it's basically this movie, this relationship building between Tom Hanks and this guy. But at the end of the movie, he gets the chair anyways, and he's like, don't put the bag on my head. I'm just gonna take it or something. I don't know. And like he also has like the it's a kind of I don't know if this movie is like like he has kind of like arrested development. Like he's kind of like
Tom Hanks or John Coffey?
John Coffey's character. He's kind of like, I don't know much. I just want to help people. And then Tom Hanks is like, oh, you're actually a good person. And he's like, I just do my best. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But yeah, he ends up getting the chair. And it's like scary because they electrocute him and they just show it. And it takes like two tries because he's so strong or something. And it's so sad. It was so sad. And I was like, I was crying and I was like, they killed him. And I was like, why'd you guys make me watch that movie? And my parents were like, oh, sorry. We thought it was a good movie. But it just made me so sad.
That's fair. That sounds really traumatizing. Because I remember being traumatized by like The Blind Side. And I don't think anybody dies in that movie.
But it's like trauma porny, isn't it?
Yeah. Green Mile sounds a little trauma porny by how you just described it. But I guess the supernatural. Yeah, it's cool.
I think this was like the start of like the magical Negro trope, where it's just like this person who shows up. Not the start, but it's definitely like a key factor where people like kind of show up and are mystical. And now that I'm thinking about it, because I'm reading about it, and someone said it's often like the person's often a janitor or a prisoner. I feel like, is Abbott Elementary, is the janitor like a subversion of this trope? Where he's like, I'm magical. But like, he's just like goofy.
But he's like smart and goofy and funny and like very non-serious.
Quinta, your brain.
I love that. Okay, I think we just discovered another episode theme. The magic, like, that would be great to talk about. But yeah, that does sound really traumatizing.
It's very like awful. I don't know what to say. It's just an awful movie.
I can tell you about a death that traumatized me an equal amount, and that is just as important. And that was the death of Bing Bong in Inside Out, which
that
is like that was so sad. Like the imaginary friend of like I think her name is Riley or something in Inside Out, and when he just like lets joy and sadness like continue on that little wagon slide and he kind of like falls to his death. That one like messed me up. And Inside Out in general, I was like, damn.
That was a good, yeah, that
like,
one
was
hit
really
me.
Sad.
I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
My friend started calling me sadness, which really made me angry.
That's so rude.
In high school, when I was being, to be fair, I was probably being annoying and like gloomy, but they were like, okay, sadness.
Aw. Did you talk like in really slow and stilted sentences?
No, I'd just be like, sad.
That's fair. High school is a sad time for many, so.
True.
Very fair. And if anything, Inside Out taught us that it's okay to be sad.
It is. It's balance.
Balance is important.
Soul made me cry.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I do not want this man to die. Have you seen Soul?
I've seen Soul. I have thoughts about Soul that I don't know how controversial they are, but I think I liked it when I first watched it, but as time has gone on, I've liked it less. But I still think it's a good movie.
Why do you like it less?
I think I like it less because I feel like it would have been a way more entertaining movie if they delved into, like, I feel like it would have been a way more entertaining movie if Jamie Foxx's character didn't spend the entire movie in the body of a cat with Tina Fey in the body of a black man.
Yeah.
And I also thought it would have been way more entertaining if they leaned more heavily into the musical part.
True.
And had a little, like, Pixar jazz musical. Which
true.
Would have been super fun.
That's
and
true.
I felt like the body switching plot was not needed. Even though it like makes sense in the context of the film, but I feel like the concept they had, there were so many more interesting and fun and less obvious directions they could have gone with it. But I understand at the end of the day it was for children.
I agree with that. I definitely was like, oh, they're doing a Princess and the Frog thing where like the character isn't a person for most of the movie.
And it happens with a lot of Disney's animated black characters, but that is a discussion for another day.
True. We should do a Disney. I think we should do it. Oh, Firefly and Princess and the Frog. That made me sad. You remember the Firefly and Princess and the Frog?
No, I don't.
He like
actually.
Dies and he becomes a star. I was like, oh my god, he's dead.
Really? I actually don't remember that.
That like made me really sad when I saw that movie. And I feel like I was pretty young. What's his name? Simba's dad.
Mufasa
death. That's a classic.
That
sad
one's really
one.
Sad. Nemo's mom.
I know. Yeah. Honestly, I was never really. I was like, oh, well,
For Finding Nemo in general?
And
or that
same
death?
With Mufasa. I was like, oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I don't remember being that sad. I think the first one that messed me up was like in Up. Like with Carl's wife,
that was sad.
Ellie or Elle or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I was like, oh.
Oh. Yeah, they really set it up. Oh, I got two. I got two okay. sub. Talking about subplots where someone dies. Holes.
Oh, what's his name?
I can fix that. When he dies, you know, the guy, the black guy who like sells the onions and they kill him because he fell in love with the him and the white lady fall
yes.
in love. That like to this day, every time that little vignette in Holes comes up, I'm done.
Yeah, great movie, absolutely traumatic scene.
Great movie about the prison industrial complex.
Agreed.
And generational trauma and racism and everything and greed. So that vignette and then oh no, the other one's escaping me. There's another one. Oh, in Haunting of Hill House. No, yeah, Haunting of Hill House. Have you seen that TV show? It's like a horror show.
No, I haven't.
But there's a subplot where the most like haunted character, and she's so sad looking. She has such a good sad face. So you just feel so bad for her. But she falls in love, and she has like sleep problems and paralysis, and she falls in love with her like therapist, who's like really good at dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And he helps her, and then one day he has a brain aneurysm while she's suffering sleep paralysis, so she can't really do anything to help him. And it's so sad.
Oh my God, wait, not to cut you off. Actually,
no,
I take it back. Most traumatic death in a movie for me as a kid, Bridge to Terabithia.
True. I read the book. Oh my gosh.
Like,
True.
Actually, I remember, because that movie came out when we were, what, like 6 or 7?
Yeah, we were young.
I was like, could not be consoled. I refused to go in like forests.
True.
Like, yeah, that movie messed me up.
That
messed,
yeah. That was like bad. And then I remember, have you ever watched Luther?
No.
I don't even want to talk about it because Luther's a really good show and you should watch it. So I'm not even going to spoil it.
Thank you.
But there was a death in Luther. Me and my dad had been binging and the thing happened and both of us were just crying buckets. And I got so angry and I just went to bed. I'm like, I don't want to watch the show anymore.
Aww.
And we stopped the binge. But that the death in Luther, I think people know what I'm talking about. There's multiple emotional ones, but like the most emotional and shocking one. That one got me.
Well, honestly, I think like even though this was a little bit of a darker episode because we were talking about like death.
Sorry.
The whole time. No need to apologize. I think it is like a huge testament to like how skilled like writers and actors can be when it comes to like creating some kind of media, because I feel like if the death didn't have any form of impact, then what's the point?
Yeah.
So I feel like if anything, it's a celebration of life that the creatives pour into this media. And that is me trying to use some positive reframing.
True.
But I think it's working.
Yeah.
It's working.
I also have to say though, people need to stop doing little vignettes in shows and movies where a nice black person dies.
Yes.
Because that's what happens in Holes, and that's what happens in Haunting of Hill House. And it literally, like, wrecks me, even though it's, like, a 10-minute... The whole story happens in 10 minutes, but I'm done, like, at the end of it.
Yeah, please stop.
So please stop that. But yeah.
Please stop. Any final thoughts?
No, not many. Just that Succession did a really good job. I feel like it was a very unique approach to the death of the like titan of the show. Attack on Titans, I had a lot of deaths. Sasha and Attack on Titan ended me. That's my final thought.
That's
Sasha,
your final thought.
Everyone dies on that show, and that death really did me in.
Okay,
that's
I'll
my
try
final
to forget
thought.
That name in case I end up watching it so it's not spoiled.
True.
But do you have any like predictions for next week's Succession? I'm guessing it's going to be a funeral or some kind of fallout.
Yeah, funeral. Succession talk, like literal succession talk.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stuff's gonna happen. Stuff with Skarsgård's character. Something like
stuff
that.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we end now.
Do you have final thoughts?
Not really. Just that I really liked. I think like this week's episode of Succession is gonna go down as an all-timer in terms of TV episodes and TV deaths. I think the show Succession is going to be our generation's The Wire and Sopranos in terms of TV quality. I truly, truly believe that. And I'm just really excited to see how they wrap things up. And that's all.
Awesome. Well, we'll be back next week, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. with Fan Club.
Chopped and Screwed is up next.
Great show. Great new show. Bye-bye.
Bye.